Welcome to NHL Induction Class. I'm John Shannon. Today, someone who's had an impact on the game of hockey and never played a single game in the National Hockey League, and yet is a household name in Canada, a household name around the world, and probably grew the game more in the last 25 years than anyone else. The great Haley Wickenheiser, 23 years a member of Team Canada, Olympic gold medalist, and someone truly is a trailblazer in the game. Hello, Haley. Congratulations on your induction to the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Hi, John. Thanks very much.
So, it's the typical first question. Who called? How did you know? And what was your reaction?
Well, I was actually in a code blue simulation at med school, so I did see the 416 number pop up, but I couldn't actually answer my phone. So I eventually got out of there, and I got a text from Lanny McDonald that he had said, please call me. So at that point, I knew what it was about, but I didn't actually receive the initial call.
Now, I'm one of those people, and I've been around the game. Heck, I've been around the game longer than you have. And what I would say is that your induction to the Hall, to me, was, of the six people, and it's not a reflection of them, was the easiest vote of all. This was an empty net goal. I would say slam dunk, but we're doing hockey, not basketball. This, to me, was a no-brainer that you go into the Hockey Hall of Fame for what you've done for hockey. That you must have known that all along.
Well, I honestly, John, it's not something that I grew up thinking about or that really crossed my mind very much. I mean, I grew up, okay, I want to win a Stanley Cup, but I want to win Olympic gold medals. And, you know, all of those things were very real, and I thought about them a lot. But in terms of, like, the Hall of Fame, I never actually thought about it that much, even at the end of my career, until mostly media would start asking me about it. And then it was like, oh yeah, there's that too. But it wasn't really a thing for me because, quite honestly, growing up, it was what I saw was just a place for NHL players. That was it. And so it's really changed over the years, I think, the thinking at the Hall of Fame. And so, you know, now it is something I think women will contemplate a bit more than I ever did.
But here's the other thing. You know, with a playing career, you always think team first. And when mm-hmm. you do finish your career, you're no longer part of a team, and individual accolades start to occur. I mean, you're a member of the yeah. Order of Canada. With everything you've always done as a teammate, after the fact, you get recognized as an individual, and there must be some satisfaction to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge honor. I mean, for a hockey player, this is as good as it gets. This is sort of the holy grail, I think, for any individual hockey player to be. I've always looked at the Hall of Fame as the best of the best in terms of players and just like performance and, you know, output when you played, how much you won, the kind of points you put up, the kind of player, the longevity that you had. So when I look at the players in the Hall of Fame, I mean, I know that I'm looking at the best of the best. So to be amongst that is, it is a pretty big honor. I guess it didn't hit me as much until I started really hearing from other people. I started, you know, I was chatting with Brendan Shanahan one day and Babcock and these guys, and just the way that they look at the Hall of Fame, and you know, you just see the respect and the honor that it is for people.
Before we talk about your career with the Toronto Maple Leafs, because that's going to come up at some point, take me back to Shaunav in Saskatchewan. You, in your first words to me, you talked about winning the Stanley Cup and winning Olympic gold. You obviously were a huge hockey fan. Saskatchewan is the one of the great hotbeds of hockey in our country. So who was your favorite player when you were 8 years old?
Yeah, so I grew up, I loved Messier and Gretzky and the Oilers of the 80s. And my dad, in fact, my dad was not an elite hockey player. He was a teacher and an old-timer hockey player in our town. So, but we got Saturday Night Hockey Night in Canada. We had three channels growing up, and Hockey Night Canada was one of them. And, you know, my dad and I would watch the games, and we would talk through the games, and he'd say, you know, watch that Messier, how he shoots the puck off his off foot, or you watch Gretzky, how he delays at the blue line, and look how smart that is. And we would enjoy, like, sort of talking through the game. And then in between periods, I would go out. We flooded a rink kind of in our backyard, and I'd put my skates on, so I'd skate across the alley and go on the rink and pretend that I was those guys. I was Paul Coffey skating or whatever. you know, whoever it was at the time. And but the Oilers of the late 80s really impacted my life. And it's funny, when I see those guys, I tell them, they don't really understand. No. But for me, it was a big deal that because I didn't have any female hockey role models to look up to. I didn't even know that another girl played hockey besides me till I was about 10 years old. I thought I was the only girl in the world. So I was sort of insulated in my little town. And so that was the thing. I used to practice signing my autograph because I was going to win the Stanley Cup and all that stuff. And, you know, no one said that that's not okay as a little girl.
How much of an advantage was it for you to play with boys?
I think it was huge. I think, you know, now it's different because, you know.
Well, the world's changed. Listen, let's face it. You, and I mean, when you look at Angela Ruggiero and Cammy and Angela James and Jaina and everybody else that's in the hall, you have changed the game.
Yeah, no, the game has changed. You're right. You know, if you're a little girl now, you're probably not forced to play with the boys like I was. You had options. Right. And even when I had options, I still chose to play with the boys because I really felt that it made me, because the only thing truly that I cared about growing up was the game of hockey. Like, I wasn't actually super interested in what happened off the ice in the dressing room. And right. I more loved the game and being on the ice. And so I wanted to always play at the best level that I could and sort of push myself, and playing with the boys was fine. And growing up, you know, you're in a small town, you hang out with everyone. And it was really, you know, going to other small towns across Saskatchewan where I took a lot of grief from mostly parents of the other team, the boys on the other team.
You seriously took grief?
Oh, yeah, tons. Yeah, I had a lot of abuse growing, a lot of abuse, a lot of you know, intimidation, a lot of, you're not welcome here. And it was always one or two parents on every team that I played against. And I remember one mother, in one small town, walked right into the little dressing room I was changing in and told me I didn't belong on the ice with her son and stay away and all this stuff. And one of the other moms on my team had to actually step in and tell her to get lost. So, it, you know, those things I'll never forget. I mean, and I think in some ways it made me strong and resilient. And I heard, you know, there's nothing that anyone could ever say to me that I haven't heard in the game, right? So, you know, but I knew that was, unfortunately, that was what I was going to have to go through in order to play at the levels that I was playing at growing up. And hopefully for young girls today, it's a lot different.
Okay. Before I get any farther, I don't want Geraldine Heaney phoning me, so I better mention her name as one of those members in the hall as well. But how with that discussion about the mother coming in, how are you not bitter? You say you've never forgotten. There are times we all get hazed. There are times we all get criticized. But I'll tell you what, Haley, I never forget. And there are some times I get really mad.
Yeah, I mean, it's enough time has passed. And at some point, you got to move on in life. I mean, I was literally 8 years old at the time. And the way I see it is the accumulation of all those things that I had to go through was in a way, gave me this I'll show you attitude, and it fueled my fire. So I actually thank those people for sort of pushing me forward in a way that I said internally in myself, I'm not going to be denied. I mean, there was another situation. I made the midget AAA team here in Calgary. And it was the midget AAA Northwest team. And I played 15 games in the season. I came home from a tournament in Medicine Hat. And the coach pulled me into his office. I thought he was going to tell me how good I played. Uh-huh. And he told me he couldn't handle having a girl on the team, and he cut me on the spot. And my mom was waiting in the parking lot. I walked outside Father Bauer Arena here in Calgary. And she's like, oh, how'd the tournament go? I said, I just got cut. And her mouth just dropped open. And it was like, at that point, you know, I had been through so much. But what had ended up happening after that is the national team came sort of calling a couple months later, and I ended up playing on the national team. So I looked at that guy now. I mean, I'll never forget his name. I'll never forget the day. I'll never forget the room. But right. I kind of look back and I say, I wonder where you are now. And it worked out okay for me. So it's, you know, that's just, everybody goes through those times in your career, and it just has to fire you up to keep going.
So prior to getting to the national team, there had to be some people other than your parents that motivated you and helped you along the way. Who would they be?
Oh, geez, there's so many. I think in my hometown in Shaunavon, we had I think I was talking to my parents the other day about this. There's sort of a village of people that made it okay for the girl to play hockey and kind of protected me and pushed me along the way. And one local guy in particular, Kenny Billington, he's a local farmer in our community. And maybe the opposite of who you would think girls could play hockey is sort of this redneck cowboy boot wearing farmer. But he was the guy that, you know, he pulled me up to play peewee when I was in Adam, and he really, you know, believed in me as a hockey player, and I think he instilled a lot of confidence in me at a young age, as did a lot of people in my community. And then in my early days with the national team, there was a lot of people, Wally Kozak, Shannon Miller, who was our coach in the 98 Olympics and 02, and I mean those early years, Bob Nicholson was gave me my first chance to play on the national team when I was 15. He called my mom and dad and said, we'd like to keep her. And my parents said, well, we think she's too young. And I said, forget it, I'm going to play. So there's a lot of people that had an impact in my career. And then, of course, the women. When I started on the national team, I was only 15. I played with women that were, I was a 15-year-old math student. And my roommate was Margot Page, and she was a 35-year-old math teacher, grade 10 math teacher, and I was a grade 10 math student. So
Margot worked for me for a while. So.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. You yeah, sure? Margot. Yeah, she was fantastic. And those women like Frost St. Louis and Stacey Wilson and Angela James, they all took me under their wing when I was really a kid, and they didn't have to do that and made a big impact on my career.
Well, and what a career it was when you think 23 years with the national program. 13 world championships, the Olympics, and the highs and lows of those games. I not to make this about me, but I will tell one quick story. The most emotional time at any Olympics in my life was 2002 on that Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the men's game on the Sunday. It was Canada USA on that Thursday night where you won.
Yeah, that was you and Pat Quinn both. I'll never forget skating off the ice after we won that game. Pat mm-hmm. Quinn was standing on our bench in tears.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a time because it was obviously September 11th had happened. One of the U.S. players' fathers was killed in the World Trade Center. And mm-hmm. so it was a very emotionally charged time for both teams, but in particular the U.S. and then with the Olympics in the U.S. And then, you know, kind of it morphed into us against the world with Wayne and the men's team. And there was just a lot of emotion around that Olympics. And then we had to play 30 minutes shorthanded in the gold medal final,
right.
Kind of beat the refs and the U.S. at the same time. So it was, I think, really the start of something great for, four Olympics in a row, winning gold medals with the team. And I'll never forget that. That was one of my highlights in my career for sure.
And your interview post game with the about the flag, right?
Yes. So we had been going into the rink, and I was with Therese Brisson, one of my teammates, one day, and the rink guys kept telling us they've got this flag in their room, and this Canadian flag. And Therese turned to me and she said, "Well, when we win that gold medal, when you get interviewed, you ask them if they want us to sign it." And I said, "I will." And so we ended up winning. It was pretty, obviously it was an emotional game, and I skated right over to Dawn and said what I said, and Dawn hasn't let me forget about that.
No.
Took some flack for it, but I don't regret that. In the moment we used that, and the loony at center ice was a thing.
Sure.
And we took everything we could emotionally to pull out a win in that under those circumstances.
Well, let's face it, 2002 in so many ways. Again, we were all there in Nagano in 1998. You were supposed to win in 1998.
Yeah.
My theory has always been that the Hockey Canada program, and I've told Nicholson this myself, the Hockey Canada program actually helped the American program as much because you played them so much.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think we still do. We got players playing in NCAA. We're just fueling their program continuously. But anyway, I think 98, we were the better team. We went in, and for lack of a better word, we kind of choked in the final game, and we lost. And then in 02, we were 0-8 and going into the gold medal game.
Right.
And they dominated us. And it was like, sometimes when you play with nothing to lose and you just don't care anymore, you play your best hockey in a way. And that's kind of that and the circumstances of having to kill penalties all game really turn the emotion and the momentum in the rink in our favor.
Are you able to talk to some of your American friends about it? I mean, the one thing I notice is that when you talk about college hockey, you talk about the former Women's Pro League, the CWHL, there's so much intertwining of American players and Canadian players. Do you ever talk to them about all the Olympic Games?
I got to be honest, John, I don't have any American friends.
Okay. Well, there we go. Okay. That answers that question.
So, I mean, I should say quite like that. But honestly, for me, it was like a cold war, and I liked it like that. I didn't need to be going for beers and hanging out. And it's changed now, and just as the NHL has changed, because NCAA and the pro league players are playing on the same teams as each other. You know, that's a little different. But for me,
I'm sorry. you got me going now. That's funny. Yeah. That's funny.
My closest friend, I suppose, Cammy Granato was a real mentor when I was younger. And I haven't talked to her, in detail in years about it. But I mean, that's about all there is. Yeah, I don't much contact.
Hey, listen, Cammy's come to our country. Cammy lives in Vancouver now. That's okay.
Yeah, she's half Canadian.
There you go. Before we stop talk about the Olympics, the other one that jumps out, and I'm not trying to eliminate Torino at all because it was exciting, but to me, Vancouver at home and Sochi. And not just Sochi, but how you won in Sochi. I mean, to me, with Marie-Philippe Poulin's two goals, but the puck rolling down the ice and hitting the goalpost, I mean, so much of the history of Olympic hockey, not just men's or women's hockey, but Olympic hockey revolves around what your team did in Vancouver and what your team did in Sochi.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Vancouver was special because, you know, to win and to play in your home country in the Olympics.
Sold out every game, Haley.
Yeah, it was.
Full
it was
every massive. Night.
Every night, and it was in the streets that you couldn't escape it. Like, it's, just that, the way that Canadians embraced that Olympics, not just hockey, but that Olympics in general, it made me so sad when Calgary didn't vote to bid for the next Olympics, to be honest, because I think that's a big mistake. And it was an Olympics that I will never forget. And just being able to win in your home country, it's really hard to do that. We kind of embraced that, and we actually played really good hockey from the start of the Olympics right through to the end. Like, we didn't have many bumps along the way, which was good. And then Sochi, we had a lot of bumps.
Yes.
We lost 40 games out of 60 in the lead-up to the games. We had injuries. We had a new head coach in Kevin Denis 3 months before the games, and then we were down 2-0 with 10 minutes to go and came back and won in pretty spectacular fashion in overtime. So, there was a lot of adversity. I think it might be the best Olympic comeback in hockey history, male or female. I don't know, but it was quite there's a lot of drama in that game with the puck hitting the post, and it, we had no business winning it, really, in some ways. We got a lucky goal to make it 2-1 off the American shoulder, and then then dominated a little bit more in overtime. But yeah, I'll never forget that one either.
Well, there, Team USA speed in that tournament. You know, when you think of what Hillary Knight and Kendall Coyne and Amanda Kessel, what they did and how fast that first line was, you had a difficult time playing against them. The whole team did.
Yeah, I mean...
You don't have to admit it. It's okay. You don't have to admit it.
I'm not going to deny it. No, the Americans, the speed it for sure is one thing, but actually it's not so much that I thought was difficult, is that I think they moved the puck better than we did as a five-man unit. They played more free, and so it appeared that they were faster, and they played faster than we did. And we struggled with that all season long because I don't think we played the kind of style of hockey that we should have been playing, to be honest. And so they were a better team, I think, throughout the year and into mm-hmm. that gold medal final. But I think, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of experience. There was a lot of, pride that we were going to be denied. And
sure.
And we got lucky a little bit, too.
So we talked earlier about you playing with the boys when you're eight. 2003, you make a decision to play with the boys again professionally in Finland. What was that like?
You know what? It was great. I didn't really know what to expect, but I was kind of shopping around for a good situation. Talked to quite a few people in the game, and I thought if I found a place where I would be welcome, it would be all right.
How difficult was it to find a place that you were welcome?
Well, I'll tell you, I had a signed deal in Bolzano. I was on my way to the airport, and as I was arriving at the airport, I got a call, and the Italian Federation at the last minute made a rule that said no woman could play in the A-League in Italy, and that contract fell through, and it was a signed deal. So that happened, and I waited 2 more months, and then I ended up finding this place in Finland, which was Salona, with a team partially owned by Teemu Selänne. And coached by Matti Hagman, who played for the Oilers in the late 70s. And so I remember when I first arrived, Hagman pulled me aside and he said, I just want you to know that if anything happens on the ice, no one's coming to help you.
I know Matti well enough that I know that that makes sense coming from him.
Yeah, and you know what? I love the man. And he was so... actually, he's brilliant in terms of as a bench coach. He didn't actually put his skates on in practice, never once. He'd sit on the bench and call practice. But in the games, he was really good. He had a really good feel for the games. And he, I think, respected what I could bring and what I could do, which was use my head and make plays, and that it was useful for him in areas. So we went from, started in the second division there, and we won the whole thing to move up to the first. That was a big deal because a lot of people thought it was a joke that I was going there and that, you know, I wasn't, you know, it was a publicity stunt. But I averaged half a point a game in my pro hockey experience over there, and I'm pretty proud of what, you know, I was able to do.
What were your teammates like? How did they treat you?
They were good. Well, actually, the first 3 weeks that I was in Finland, nobody talked to me. And I realized as time went on, it's not because they don't want to, it's because they're so shy.
Yeah.
The Finns are so reserved. But one guy in particular, the big defenseman, he was the first practice and the first week I was there, he'd pair up with me in every drill, and he would just try to absolutely kill me every time I was on the ice. And then a couple weeks in, he came up to me off the ice and he said in broken English that, you know, I'm very sorry, but Hagman told me to do that so that everyone could see that you could take a hit. And so this guy, and from that point forward, you know, I got, actually to this day, I still keep in touch with a lot of guys I played with in Finland. They come to Canada and I go there and visit, and a lot of really great friendships out of that experience there. So they're fantastic, actually.
Do you see a point where there will be more females? I mean, Shannon Zabados played in the Southern League as a goaltender. Do you see a time where more women will play professional hockey with men, and is there a need to?
Yeah, no, I don't, because right now you've got the you know, the Dream Gap Tour, the movement to try to get women's pro hockey. That's the way that this thing's going to go, I think, eventually, and it's just a matter of time. I know the NHL's got a plan and they're going to do something. I think it's a question of, you know, the two leagues, the Canadian Women's Hockey League and the National Women's Hockey League. Now the Canadian Women's Hockey League is folded. They've kind of done the right thing for the game, and the NWHL is sort of hanging on life support and is going to eventually have to fold because no good players are playing in that league, really. So, like, in terms of having the best players in the world in one league. And so I think that's the way forward. It's just a question of time and money and interest and, yeah, a lot of things, but we've been working at this for many, many years. It's been very slow.
Can a women's league make money?
Initially, I would say no. But I think over time, if it's done properly, yes. And I think it's also not always about the money in the same way that it's about generating interest and fans and other viewership for the game and having a family of four come watch a women's pro hockey game, and they're going to pay $80 to watch that game, mm-hmm. and so that they're going to pay $400-$500 to go watch an NHL game, which is almost out of range for most people to take a family to an NHL game these days. So, you know, I do think there is a place for it. You know, initially, I think everyone needs to be reasonable in what the expectations are and start, you know, in smaller junior arenas and grow it properly. But I do think over time, yeah, it can.
I'm not going to hold you to it, but do you see yourself having a role either with a club or with the league at some point?
Yeah, I don't know, John. Like, I think, you know, right now I'm really happy with what I'm doing with the Leafs. I love my role there and just the opportunity to be in the game in that capacity. So I'm a little tied up with medicine and the Leafs. But, yeah, I'd never say never. I guess we'd have to see how that all looked.
So let's talk about the Maple Leafs. You're in the development area. Kyle Dubas have created a good relationship. What is your role with the team?
Yeah, so my role, I work in development with six or seven others, with Scott Pellerin and Stefan Robidaux, and we've got five or six folks that we work for anywhere from junior prospects across the country in the system to a lot of development days with the Marlies, where we go out on the ice and split guys up into different pods and work on specific skills. And then with the Leafs as well, doing the same thing, whether it's, post-game skate, 10, 15 minutes, or a couple of weeks, you know, I was doing some rehab for John Tavares with his broken finger out on the ice with JT and, you know, keeping him going, and Hyman and Dermott recently and with their injuries. So I guess whatever's needed is sort of where we fill in. And I enjoy being able to work with, you know, a young kid here on the Hitmen right up to, one of the greatest players in the world, like Tavares, on any given day. It's a nice kind of range and mix, and gets me out on the ice too and stay close to the game. Yeah.
John Tavares, you're right. He's one of the best players in the game. And Haley, you're at the top of the list on the women's side. Is there do you sense a mutual respect there? Do you sense that somebody like JT would understand who and what you are and what you've done for the game?
Yeah, I was asked that question recently, and my answer is, you know, the better the player, the less of an issue it is for me. Because I actually trained with JT off the ice in the summers, and Spezza and these guys for years, Crosby, and spent quite a bit of time my own training and playing with these guys. So when I get on the ice with them, it's seamless. It's really simple. And with JT and I, we have a good relationship. We go back and forth, talk about the game, and, you know, share little clips and, you know, talk about training and nutrition and all that kind of stuff. And I've worked with him, you know, for a while prior to even being on the Leafs, you know, where it helped them in different ways in the game, and then knew them through the Olympics. So with those guys that typically I've been around, especially when it comes to Olympics time, it's really not an issue. I think the men have a lot of respect for the elite women players and for what we go through to play the game as well.
You're not suggesting that the 18-year-old kids look at you and say, "Who are you?"
Oh, yeah. I have to remember that they're the same age as my son, which is kind of strange, but at the same time, it might be a bit of an advantage, because sometimes I feel like I'm talking to my son.
Well, it keeps you young, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
You touched on training and nutrition. I would suggest that the game has changed almost as much off the ice, both women's and men's, as it has on the ice. And a lot of it has to do with what you eat, how you go into the weight room, perhaps not even the weight room, but the exercise room. And that really has changed so much for both the men's and women's side of the game, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, I like to say it's a lifestyle. It's everything. It's how you eat, sleep. It's what you think. It's every little detail. And the best players in the world, typically in my experience, are all over that stuff. They're looking for the extra 1%. They're dialed into taking care of their bodies off the ice, and you know, anything like the training and the nutrition and the mental side of the game, and really developing like almost a PhD in the game of hockey. And that's kind of where you need to be an elite athlete, really, in any sport, I think. So, you know, there's a tendency, but at the same time, and I see it more at the junior level, I think there's a tendency that we're maybe sometimes getting away from just the pure creativeness and the play. And sometimes I think, oh, geez, are we making hockey robots here and everybody's playing the same way? Because, you know, you just that Oilers of the 80s run and gun style. Mm. I think you still need to have some of that in hockey, and that, you know, that brilliance that comes with maybe not necessarily knowing what's going to happen every time you step on the ice, I think it's part of the beauty of the game of hockey. So when I work with players, I try to say to them, you know, you've got to trust your instincts and, you know, go with what you can. But it's hard at the pro level when a coach wants you to play a certain way, and you know, there's a lot of pressure on these guys. But it definitely is 24 hours a day now.
It's even changed when you go to camp with the Maple Leafs in 2019. It's even changed from the time when you went to camp with the Flyers in the late 90s, hasn't it?
Oh, man, has it ever. I mean, Flyers was like 12 hours a day of training. And I remember I just crawl into bed at like 7 o'clock at night, just dead from like, they just try to kill you all day long and what we were doing. And then, Leaf camp, the first time I went, I was like, oh, this is it. You know, we're done by noon and you're out of the rink and it's a couple hours on the ice. And I think you can only fitness test for like 4 hours total. And when we're doing fitness testing with the national team, our fitness testing literally is 3 days long. That's like, it's like we do more fitness testing on the national team than any NHL team will ever do because of the CBA. So, yeah, it's very different. But I mean, I don't think it's worse or better. It's just changed a lot in terms of the way that people choose to look at training camp.
So you talked about when Lanny and John Davidson tried to get a hold of you that you were in a code blue. When is it Dr. Hilly Wickenheiser?
It's going to be a little while. I mean, I've got another year or so left in medical school. Then I guess I'll be an MD and I'll be able to start my residency and go from there. But it's fun. I enjoy it. I enjoy, being in medicine really gives me energy when I go to hockey and vice versa. You get to see, a lot of times in hockey, I remember as a player, I felt it was the end of the world if things didn't go well, and I had no perspective. And I see in medicine, you see someone die right in front of your eyes, and people have really, really bad days, not just losing a hockey game. And it really puts a lot of things in perspective. And I think it actually helps me do my job in development because I'm able to have that perspective when I talk to players and try to sometimes help take that pressure away from, when you get so close to something, sometimes you can't see the trees through the forest.
Okay, so a two-part question. Did you choose hockey or did hockey choose you?
That's a good question, John. I don't know. I actually think I was born to play the game. Like, I think I was just, like, it must have chosen me. I remember asking my dad if I could play, and I was on this sled. He was pulling me home from the rink, and then we built a rink in our backyard, and I spent more time as a kid outside than I did inside, for sure. I lived on that rink. We lived outside. We played all the time. It's just what I did.
And did medicine choose you, or did you choose medicine?
I think, I don't know. I think in some ways it also chose me. Maybe it was, as a kid, I always wanted to go to the NHL and go to Harvard Med School. Those were kind of like the two things I had in my head. And I don't know. I think medicine maybe said to me after hockey, okay, it's time to do something more outside of yourself and, for the greater picture here. But I've always been intrigued by medicine.
So I can acknowledge you work for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You do work in the NHL. You did make it to the NHL. But tell me that point when you realized you may not get there as a player. You may not get to the NHL as a player. How hard was that?
Oh, it wasn't hard at all. I mean, I think I was about 10, and I remember we were at a hockey school in Osoyoos, BC, and Cammy Granato.
Hey,
was
I'm from that area of the country, you know that.
Oh, that's right. Yes. So it was God's country out there.
Absolutely.
Went there for years for this hockey school, and Cammy Granato was actually instructing, and my mom came running into the room, and she said, you'll never believe what was just announced. Women's hockey is going to be a full medal sport in the 98 Olympics. And at that moment, I went, oh, I have a place to go, because I knew that the NHL was, out of reach. I was a female, and how was that ever going to happen? Some way in my head, I knew that that was not happening. But at that moment, I said, that's exactly where I want to go. And I thought, maybe I will go to Harvard and I'll get it and I'll go into med school, I'll play university hockey, and that'll be it. But then at that point, I knew I had a place. So it wasn't hard at all.
You touched on Noah, your son, who's almost 20 now. What was his reaction when you told him you're going to the Hockey Hall of Fame?
He was like, oh, that's cool, Mom. Yeah, that's great.
Does he not realize... I mean, and I can say it. Does he not realize how great a player you were?
I think I think he does, but I think, you know, Noah has no interest in hockey. I have to be honest. He does not like hockey. He has never liked it. He is just his own man. He's in the military. He's in the reserves out in. He goes to University of Victoria. He studies art and military history.
Wow.
And he is
He's smarter than the rest of us then.
Yes, he was sending me philosophy quotes yesterday. I had no idea what he was talking about. But yeah, he's just, you know, but the thing is he's 20. So he's actually seen my whole career. And I was talking to him yesterday about it. I said, you know, you've seen a lot of great things, but you've also seen a lot of tough things as well. You know, through a hockey career of 20 years, there's also a lot of losses and stress that go into that. So I think they both impacted him in equal ways, but I think in the end he's turned out okay. And he's excited to go to the Hall of Fame because I think he likes to get dressed up in a nice suit and go out. And, I think it'll be special for him, but he was never really enamored with my hockey career. No.
No, but when he sees the amount of people, the amount of great hockey people. I mean, I Monday night at the Hall, I made no secret of this, is one of my favorite nights of every year. And to just to walk around and look at legends and be able to talk to legends is just, it is so special. And I say, I mean, not just the NHLers, but, you know, Vasilev Nedimansky, who's part of your class, to me is the epitome of what this game is all about. It's an exciting, exciting night.
Yeah, it is for sure. I mean, I'm looking forward to that part. And I was talking to Noah. My son is Czech, and I was saying to him, I was telling him about Vasilev Nedimansky yesterday, and that my son is more excited about meeting Nedimansky than anyone, because he understands communism and he understands what went on at that time in the Czech Republic and how hard that would have been as a player to leave your home country and maybe never see your family again. So, you know, that's a very real thing. I think Canadians, maybe we don't understand that. We look at just NHL stars in hockey, like it. That's just the fact of the matter. But what those guys did was pretty special. So, I really appreciate the game everywhere in the world. And I think the Hockey Hall of Fame is now recognizing that more and more.
Two practical questions. How do we make the women's game better outside of Canada, United States?
Yeah, great question. We have to keep putting pressure on countries to do more for their women's programs. So, for example, Sweden, I think there's no Four Nations Cup this year because the Swedish women have chosen to not play for their federations because they're not getting funded. They're not getting supported. I've never seen Sweden so bad as I saw them in the 2018 Olympics in my whole career. It's a shame because that's a great hockey country. And so what is happening over there, I'm not sure. But those countries, Finland, Sweden, Germany, Russia, Switzerland, that have the means to do it, they should be doing more. And I think by having a pro women's hockey league, maybe getting those best players from Europe in and showing them, you know, this is how you are operate as a pro player can help them go back to their countries. So it's really important for the game.
Well, we started this interview with a phone call. Let's end it with a phone call. Tell me what you told your mom and dad.
I just actually walked over to their house and said, Lanny called and I'm going into the Hall of Fame. And my dad said, yeah, I saw it on the news tonight. So it was pretty just, that's my mom and dad for you. No, kind of no big deal. Nothing was, you know, they were just always there, but, they never went crazy about anything through my hockey career, which I appreciate, actually.
Well, Haley, thank you for doing this. This has been a real treat. And you know when you've become somebody, when you can be in a TV commercial, as you are in Canada, humming the old Hockey Night in Canada theme, and you look through the window and you can say, hey, that's Haley Wickenheiser.
Yeah, that was... I actually did think about that, John. That was a pretty cool thing to do, actually. It only took 12,000 takes, but it was a lot of fun.
Hey, yeah. Get used to it. This is you're going to be in our business sooner than later. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, no. Thanks a lot, John. I appreciate it.
Haley Wickenheiser, Olympic champion, world champion, and now member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. We thank her for what she's done, and we thank her for being part of induction class. And just a reminder, to rate and review the podcast. Feedback is always appreciated, except for the host. Until next time, John Shannon. Thanks for listening to NHL Induction Class.